The IntraFish podcast is brought to you by DSM Animal Nutrition and Health, accelerating sustainable and profitable aquaculture.
Hello and welcome to the IntraFish podcast, where we bring you the most interesting and compelling seafood news. I'm Drew Cherry, editor-in-chief, joined today by John Fiorillo, executive editor. Hey, we're actually only going to talk about one topic today because it felt like that was all we were writing about. Well, that's not really true, of course. It was a full week of all kinds of things, but land-based salmon filled our pages, some of it intentional, and a lot of it just breaking news that was coming out from new planned projects, some new assessments by the Canadian government about land-based salmon and the potential for that in British Columbia. So it was busy, busy, and there's a lot to catch up on. Now, we know that this sector is one of the most closely watched in aquaculture. It seems to have captured the imaginations of investors and NGOs and all kinds of people because they see it as part of this larger circular economy. But investors are investors. They want to see a return. They want to minimize risk. And last year was not a good one for risk. Actually, the last few years haven't been good for risk, really. But that didn't seem to bother investors until last year when a lot of them dumped land-based salmon stocks and you saw some real sharp declines. Over 80% decline for Atlantic Sapphire, which is the canary in the proverbial coal mine. People are looking at Sapphire to see if this is all going to work because they have the most ambition and the most financial backing at this stage. So, and they're furthest along on creating a large project, large commercial scale project. So as they struggled, so did the rest of the industry. And so did a lot of investors. And so the efforts to finance some of these projects really ran into some headwinds, and we heard a little bit about that this week as well. So why don't we start with a list that our colleague Hannah Gazelius has been working on for quite some time of pretty much all the projects of note, all the land-based salmon farming projects of note across the world. It took a lot of compiling. It took a lot of work putting this together. A little thanks to Brian Vinci of the Freshwater Institute, who helped fill in some of the holes as we passed this around to some people and got some input. So, John, over to you. What did we find? We've done this list, I think, in the past. We did it in 2019. I believe we did it 2 years prior to that. We've kept check on this. What struck you when you read this list versus where we were 3, 5, 10 years ago?
Well, I mean, I guess what struck me is there are still so many projects out there. Now, that being said, there are still so many projects out there that haven't moved or that we really don't know what the status is. So you walk away from that list and you see, you know, I think it was described many years ago as, you know, projects are just PowerPoint presentations. And I think that's still, you know, a lot of the situation. However, to be fair, you know, we are seeing fish now produced nowhere near the promised amount. In fact, in the story about the list, we quote Kuntali, which is a market analyst, and this is astounding. Think about this. By early 2022, last year, the promised, I'll just say the promised or anticipated production that all these companies combined were forecasting was 2.2 million metric tons. That's what, if you add up all the promises and all the forecasting that these projects have done to this point. That's what you would come up with. That's, you know, darn, very darn close to what NetPen production is currently in the world. Okay, that sounds great, right? However, Kontali, they actually kind of took a true eye to this, and what they can come up with is there's likely to be no more than 13,000 metric tons of land-based salmon, maybe steelhead at the same time, but land-based salmon produced by 2025. So this 2.2 million dream, so to speak, or, you know, whatever you want, exuberance, you want to call it, if you throw cold water on it and you put some analysis to it based on what is actually happening at the moment, you got 13,000 metric tons 3 years from now. Now, is that pessimistic? Is Kontali going to be way off in 2025? I don't know. But what's telling anybody out there that it's going to be, well, certainly not 2 million metric tons. That's just complete bullshit. But what's telling anybody it's going to be more than 13,000 metric tons? I don't know.
Well, first off, we can trust the Kontali numbers. And the reason we can trust them, first off, they do an incredible job analyzing salmon. So I will say that about Kontali. But also, they're tracking very closely the smolt placement, egg placement. They're really actually looking at the nuts and bolts of this. All of these companies, it's very important that they communicate to the industry, well, communicate to investors and to the press. We get so many announcements and so many of these little drip, drip, drip of companies wanting to keep in the headlines. But it's so important to them to communicate and remind investors, hey, we're here. Hey, we're making progress. Hey, we've reached this milestone, that milestone. Well, it doesn't matter until you have smolt, until you have fish in your pens, or tanks rather, until you have fish in your tanks, you're not anywhere. And no matter what you say about when you're going to actually be harvesting fish, at 18 months, that's the fact. That's how long it takes for salmon to get to be market size, more or less. So it's impossible that you're going to see, you know, Kontali said, all right, below 50,000 metric tons by 2025. That's obviously a very, very moving target, depending on how much is put into tanks this year. So that 50,000 metric tons is, that's probably the very, very, very highest ceiling of what you're going to see. That's it, because there's no way for people to quietly, not with us all over them and Kontali and especially the stock listed one, there's no way for people to be magically hiding tens of thousands of metric tons of salmon that's going to come from tanks onto the market. Just not going to happen.
Now, yeah, and I think I misspoke. That 13,000 metric tons was
for 2022.
What's likely... Yeah, for 2022. Yeah. But you're right. By 2025, it's 50,000. Doesn't change the calculus in my mind at all. That's not a lot of fish, period. Okay, sorry.
Yeah. Now, so taking your point, you know, I think that it is, there's no doubt it's going to play a role. It can be done. And it can be done in a way that is profitable. We're seeing that, and that's going to be very, very important. Is it, can it get down to the level where you're competing with farm salmon production, conventional farm salmon production? So, or at least, are you getting a margin? Are you getting a premium on your fish somehow by highlighting the circular nature of it, the local nature of it? Those two are going to be critical. But one of the companies that's really been, and it's the new darling right now, is Salmon Evolution. It's Norway-based. No surprise, most of these companies doing land-based are Norway-based or Norway-backed or have somewhere their genesis is in Norway. But Salmon Evolution stock listed on the Oslo Stock Exchange. They have been showing some pretty impressive forward movement, and I think they've put some wind in the sails of the industry. Their first batch had 340 metric tons. Fish weighed an average of 3.75 kilograms head-on gutted, and that's getting close to that 4 to 6 area that customers look for in terms of the size of the fish. And what is interesting here is they said the average price for the fish they got was NOK 75 to NOK 78 per kilo, which seems low right now because prices are exploding right now again on the NASDAQ market or on the spot market rather. But however, at the time, this is from their quarterly report, that was around 20, about 30 cents per kilo higher than the NASDAQ price for salmon, which is kind of the, you know, the gold standard for what prices are doing. So they were able to actually get more for their fish. And even more interesting, they're projecting profitability. And that seems kind of crazy because most land-based companies don't like to even mention the profit at all because there's not any in their future. So it's very interesting. And then they're also, you know, they have interesting expansion plans, and they've made really, I think, clever partnerships. Dongwon, which is the owner of Starkist, which is a major second or third largest tuna brand in the U.S., and a huge company. They are building, together with Salmon Evolution, a farm in Korea, huge farm in Korea. And so they've got that partnership. They're looking now in Washington State, talking to some tribes here and to some counties. So that's been kind of interesting, and I think it's put some wind back in the sails, despite all of these challenges and despite what we're seeing of all these kind of dreams. But, okay, let's set that aside for a moment. That's a nice story. But let's get back to, John, what you were discussing, which is, if you're an investor, how do you separate out what is real and what is not, and what is just imagination or pretend ideas. I mean, how do they go about doing it? Something we talk about all the time, but now that we have this list together and we are going through and looking at all these companies, I mean, what was your takeaway?
Yeah, I mean, I've never been in the investment world, so I don't know how they operate, but at the very least, I would hope they visit the companies and talk to the executives and make sure they fully understand, you know, what it looks like. How long is this really going to take? You know, you can forgive investors a little bit for their enthusiasm over the years for this because it all makes such sense. You know, we're going to produce salmon on land. It's not going to be any environmental footprint to worry about, you know, and no disease, any of that. These things are going to be close to major markets, so you don't have to worry about flying this stuff all over the place and all the costs and, you know, climate implications of that. You can see why they'd be excited about this. And I mean, they should be. Those are wonderful aspects of it. And really the key to it all, right? But, and you know, I'm going to get yelled at for this, but there isn't a lot happening. And you know, people who don't like when I say that say, well, it's a brand new industry, it takes time. And I totally agree with that. I mean, if you go back and look at the birth of net pen farming in Norway, you'll see that it took a long time and a lot of investment. But you know, how much longer before we hit some sort of tipping point, or will we not? Will we just drip, slow drip until we wake up one day and we say, oh, wow, yeah, okay, we're actually producing like 300,000 metric tons now. I mean, the one you just mentioned, Salmon Evolution, their best projection is 100,000 metric tons by 2032. What year is it? 2023. I mean, I'll do the math real quick. That's a long time, right? So, that's probably realistic, I would say. That's probably more realistic than, what you see with, oh, we're going to produce, 60,000 metric tons by 2025, and their first crop out is 300 tons or, 100 tons or something like that. I don't know. If I were to give any advice to investors, I would say, tread carefully, really understand, who the team is, because the team is so important to this. And talk to people like Brian Vincey and some of those other people who've been around this forever, just to get a sense of like, does this make any sense? So I know I'm kind of down on it right now, and I'm really not. I'm just trying to keep an open mind to this, but understanding at the same time that, you can't go out and keep promising and promising and promising, and then, 4 years in, not even have broken ground. I mean, that's the other aspect of this that nobody really anticipated, I don't think. Trying to put these things in a local community sounds great. Sounds, the first thing you hear, we're going to generate 100 jobs. Okay, well, yep, cool. However, you're going to run into Pitchfork Mary and Pitchfork Bob, who don't want anything like this in their view or near their house or whatever it may be. And, Maine being the prime example, I mean, they are derailing these projects left and right.
Well, it's not just Maine, right? I mean, it's everywhere that they're going to run into these issues. I know Pure Salmon in France, and in Sweden, the projects there. So it's not so simple. We found, now we culled some. We took some off where we felt like, look, we can't find anything at all. We maybe wrote about it 15 years ago or something. But we came up with 90 that we were pretty certain existed, and were able to at least identify, okay, there is a business plan somewhere filed. It's not just complete BS. But the fragmentation is what's shocking to me. That is something that really is going to need to be addressed. There's a very interesting Carl Øystein Øyehaug. He's the CFO of Atlantic Sapphire, and he had a great quote in Hanna's story about how the biggest challenge for the land-based salmon farming sector is that it doesn't have standardization. So there's no real best practices. A lot of people have this tweak, that tweak. You have different companies that are doing the construction, different designers. And then, as you said, there's people with all kinds of expertise. I do want to say that it's important to remember that this isn't just starting from scratch, though. That's really important that the salmon farming industry, I'm assuming a lot of people know, but I'll say it just in case. Well, I know there's a lot of listeners out there that are less maybe embedded in the industry, so this is for you. Is that conventional salmon farms spend a good portion of their life as smolt, and that's the key and the critical part of salmon farming is that you raise good healthy smolt. So from eggs to, let's just call them tiny fish. If we're going to break it down. I hate it when people say baby salmon. That drives me nuts. But anyway, tiny, tinier, younger, juvenile. Anyway, but those smolt, they're getting raised to larger and larger levels because when your fish is in the water, when it's in the ocean, that's when you have more risk of disease, sea lice, escapes, predation, all the things that make raising fish hard. So companies have more and more focused on keeping smolt in smolt facilities up to about 1.5 kilograms. So if you think about that, we're not talking about a major sort of giant moonshot here to go from 1.5 kilos to 4.5 kilos, 4 kilos. I mean, it's obviously it's a big gulf. It's not easy. It's not simple. But it's been done. The technology is there, absolutely. However, you have to find technicians to do that. You have to find people that want to that want to go take a risk on a startup. So if I'm a hatchery technician at Movie and I'm making a pretty good salary and have health care and I can live where I want to, you know, in one of the locations that I'm based, that's quite different than if you say, I don't know, let's say Pure Salmon China, for example, and you say, all right, I'm going to start this project. I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm going to move to China and wow, we'll do something here. Now that's great and exciting for some people, but that's not necessarily going to attract the best talent to build these things up. So that's another aspect that's going to be a challenge for a lot of these companies. But you know, this week again, we spent so much time on land-based salmon this week, and we do write a lot about it because there's so much interest, and it is fascinating. And any kind of advances, I have to say, and I think this is what you were getting at, John, is it's our job to be critical but also highlight innovation and change and things that are moving the industry forward. And this is one of them where, as you were saying, it's important to cast a critical eye, but I think in general, this is a really positive thing for the industry to be moving and developing a new segment. This week, though, was really, really nutso for news coming out about the industry. Now, one was this Canadian government report that was looking at the prospects for land-based salmon production in BC as part of the Liberal government's ruling when Trudeau was elected that by 2025 there would be a transition away from conventional net pens to closed containment. Now, that's still up in the air because I think they ran into a buzzsaw of reality about what exactly salmon farming is and the jobs it supports, etc. But this report on land-based salmon said it was at least 10 years away before there was any significant production there. And as a matter of fact, that's even kind of making it sound better than the report actually found. I mean, it really was down on the idea of a land-based salmon sector being developed in BC. So that was fascinating because it really undercut one of the big arguments that has been made by opponents of salmon farming in BC, that we could simply move salmon on land or into closed containment projects. That's becoming kind of more of interest to some opponents. But initially, and if you'll remember, John, I mean, it was really land. It was, we need to get land-based salmon. All the aquaculture opponents really push for that. But this report is pretty, I would not be looking at BC as a place to expect a lot of land-based salmon coming out.
No, and these are the reports and the information that to talk about your question earlier. These are the materials that investors have to really pay attention to. You know, I dig down in that report. I didn't dig down in the report myself. I didn't write that story, but I mean, I can imagine there's really good information in there. You know, so One thing though you mentioned a minute ago is about this being an emerging sector that is heavily dependent on really some fascinating technology, water purification, etc. And I think that's great because you hear so many times, oh, the seafood industry never evolves, it's just the way it used to be, blah, blah. But that is so untrue. It's untrue, especially in the aquaculture end of the business where, I mean, if people really, if the layman out there, the people who are not in this industry, really understood what level of technology is being implemented in aquaculture, I think they would be astounded. So from that perspective, you know, it's a bravo. We are on the cutting edge with a lot of this. And, you know, again, I get frustrated, but as people who know more than I do tell me all the time, you got to be patient. This takes time. It's complicated. And that's true. But it's also very precarious because if the power goes out and you're not ready for it, all your fish are dead. It's really that simple. So, I again, to go back to your original question, I think investors really need to go slowly with this. And, you know, it's like a horse race. When you go to make your bet at the window, you hope you did a little research and you picked the right horse, right? I mean, because one of them's going to win and one isn't, so, or a lot aren't. So,
I think it's looking at the list, there was so many projects that I was reminded of that we hadn't thought about in so long. It was kind of shocking to think, oh my God, this was supposed to be a big project and had big plans, had big backers. Even the ones that have the most promise, I would say, that have the right people, that have the right money behind it, they're struggling as well. This week we wrote about West Coast Salmon. That's got the backing of Bregal Partners. Bregal has ownership in American Seafoods, which is the largest holder of directed pollock quota in the Bering Sea. Very big company, and board members from American Seafoods. Nutreco has come in as a backer on that. The feed giant. So you've got people that really, really know what they're doing, and yet that one's really struggled to find financing as well. So I would believe, and the chairman, I spoke to him yesterday, and he's still very bullish about the prospects of it and that the financing will fall into place. But, you know, he said that last year was a challenge, just because of the general macroeconomic climate, but also just the concerns. People are watching and seeing, oh yeah, Atlantic Sapphire had this problem, and, you know, they had a fire, they had all these little issues that, you know, it's part of, you could say it's part of learning how to do this, but sure is spooky for an investor when they're being asked to put up $100 million.
Yeah, and what we need is we need some sort of model that can be replicated relatively easily in different places. And by that, I mean, let's just say Sapphire is a model that ultimately produces 25,000 metric tons a year. Let's just throw that number out. I know their numbers are different, but whatever that model is, from the structure itself to the equipment within to the management of it, that has to be able to be transferred to outside of Boston, let's say, or upstate New York, or name another major market, Chicago, somewhere by Chicago. When a company has it that tight and that well done, and that they can just go somewhere else and pretty much copy paste, then we're really getting somewhere. But right now we've got, you said, 90 companies. Let's just say a third of them are legit, in the sense that they might make it. I mean, they're all one-offs, right? So we're gonna have all these one-off plants or farms in places. And so what's the logical next step for them? Well, they're gonna have to replicate it. But you know, the whole process is just Wild West at this point, and it will take some time before it could get to a point where you can just copy paste and put these in major markets or near major markets, so you can supply those markets, which is the holy grail of this technology from the get-go. So.
Right. I mean, you know, also this week there were new projects announced, and one of them that is in the works, or I guess we could say with a lot of these just being planned, discussed, floated, is a project based in Grimsby, UK, which is the central hub for seafood processing in the UK. And it's a smaller project, which I think is smart to start small. But the former CEO of Scottish Salmon Company, Craig Anderson, and former M&J and just a longtime executive in the industry, Mike Berthet, both are involved in this project. And I think that's the type of project that is very interesting. If you can actually build it where there is existing infrastructure for processing, for distribution, for sales, just general know-how. And so I think, as you said, John, this idea that there's you can just set these up anywhere. You know, I think the ones where you're seeing them in far-flung locations, without any commercial partners or without any real system in place for distributing them, then I think you should really think about the reality of that. And you know, gosh, I would say we've got out of these nearly 100 projects, I would be surprised if by that 2025 date that Kontali mentioned that they're being under 50,000 metric tons, I would bet that half of these companies within 3 years, by the end of 2025, and I don't even know if you can call them companies, half of these projects are dead. And it's probably going to be even more as you get 5 years out. So, because there's a race for money, you know, and there has been, and I think some investors, I know some investors have been absolutely burned.
So start that. I think that's a very, very interesting point, because start the clock at 18 months. Okay. The 18 months is how long it's going to take once you get those smolt, whatever size you want, into the grow out tanks. It's going to take 18 months to get them to a market size of 4 kilos or whatever that is. Okay. So if you haven't even started breaking ground yet, which so many of them haven't, it's gonna, you know, 18 months is where you start. So if I start tomorrow, however long it takes me to build this and all, let's say it's 2 years or a year, add on 18 months at least. I mean, 2025, no way in hell, dude. I mean, no, no. So, yeah, you know, and bravo. I don't want to disparage all the smaller enterprises out there that are already producing product, Taste of BC, some of the other ones on the East Coast. I mean, they are very small in the scope of things, but they are kicking out product on a consistent basis and getting it to their customer base, you know, whether it's food service or retail, doesn't matter. But ultimately, you have to wonder if that is the model and the idea, the ambitious and courageous idea that's Atlantic Sapphire, if that really could be the model or not. Maybe, but the model that seems to be working right now is a much smaller version of that. And I don't know how that scales into a significant sector over time.
Yeah, I think the smaller ones are going to be. It's an interesting model, but I don't. The whole point is that they're small, so I can't see some of these projects scaling just because of the tech. They're not really set up for that, and nor is that their intention. But you know, they're fun to watch. Is it something that will significantly contribute to the supply of fish? You know, in any real way, and alleviate the growth restrictions that we have in salmon. Not really. Not that we can see right now. And again, unless there are some projects that we do not know about that are ready to pump out salmon, and there are several projects. Let me have the caveat on that. There are several projects in China, for example, that. There's some that we left on the list because we know and could verify that they're actual projects. But there are several others that are mentioned in the Chinese press or people have mentioned at conferences that, you know, we don't have a reporter in China. And the available information from some of the groups that supply them with equipment is just not there. So who knows? Maybe there's going to be some massive volume coming out of China we don't know about. I don't think that's going to be the case. But at any rate, it's fun to watch, and it's man, you know, it seems to me that the investor appetite has just spiked right back up. So that's a wonderful thing about investors is they never, never learn, regardless of the sector. In 20 years, it's just been it's been wonderful, I guess you could say, to see investors go into sectors, go out of sectors, and say it was a bad sector, then jump right back in. It's kind of seafood for you, but it attracts risk takers, that's for sure. But this is interesting week because we did, you know, over the past few days, we have seen some people. You know, continuing to move forward and get permits and raise some funds. Proxymar in Japan, they just got some funds from Japanese banks. Nordic Aqua Partners just got some financing for its project in China. So things are moving forward. I think to cap this and just to kind of wrap up where we are in land-based salmon right now is the overarching trend of, could we call it localization, deglobalization, reshoring, whatever you want to call it. Our colleague Rachel Mutter had a great comment on it that sort of framed it well. So if you haven't read it, go read it. It's great. But it was just a reminder of how broken the supply chain was. Over is, but was during COVID. I mean, it just snapped. And it just was a reminder that these trade flows that we have in place, they are far more fragile than we thought. And, you know, humans are short-sighted and we think, well, this is the way it's always been done. Well, not really, not for that long. And so things change and things can change and are changing. And I do think that a lot of people really embrace the idea more than ever of local production all around the world in every market. I think because people had to, number one. But also there is a recognition that globalization is it has left a lot of people behind. And I think when people that weren't left behind felt the pinch. Then people kind of woke up and saw, okay, this is a potentially large issue. What can we do? Or this is a potentially an issue, a system rather, that's not going to necessarily be in place in 5 to 10 years in the way that it is. So what can we do for food security in particular? What can we do to actually ensure we're growing enough of our own food that we could weather another issue like this. I don't know.
Yeah,
but anyway.
and that's the problem, or that's the promise of land-based farming, fish farming, salmon farming, whatever, ultimately. And I applaud that. I think that's a great idea. I think for all the reasons you just said. So, let's hope they can make it happen because I do think it's needed.
Yeah, well, it's going to be fun to watch. Not going away. And certainly, again, this week we spent a lot of ink on it, just trying to keep up with it. And I'm sure there's a lot more to come. So, okay, we're going to wrap it up there. We are, what, a few weeks away now? 1 month away from the Boston Seafood Show, which is barreling down on us. And just a reminder that we'll have the IntraFish Leadership Breakfast there. So we've got a great lineup of speakers, and we'll be moderating a panel there. It's always a great crowd. So again, intrafishevents.com, and you can sign up and get your ticket there. Hurry up, it actually is getting close to filled. Also, remember that you can find our coverage on intrafish.com 24/7. You can sign up for our newsletters. Speaking of, if you are an IntraFish subscriber, IntraFish.com subscriber, you are able to get John Fiorillo's new newsletter, The Wave. I have been reading the early drafts of his first newsletter. I'm really excited. It's capturing John's fantastic voice and humor and insight. It's really a huge value add to for those of you that have a subscription. For those of you that don't, this is a great reason because every week John's going to be diving down deep into a lot of retail and food service trends. John, any preview for the newsletter that you can share with our dear listeners?
We go inside a new supermarket in the US, which is really selling food in a very different way. And we're hopefully gonna get a first look at how they're dealing with seafood.
Loads of people have jumped in and signed up for John's newsletter. So you can find, if you just go to our front page, you'll see there's a story there for how to sign up for the Wave newsletter. All right, folks, thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you next time.
The IntraFish podcast is brought to you by DSM Animal Nutrition and Health, accelerating sustainable and profitable aquaculture.